Dear girls, today it's Sunday, 16th of July, and I gotta speed up, boost up my energy a little to talk here adequately for you. And as I said 2 episodes back, of course I shouldn't smoke and be over smoked and baked, because it's not adequate for you girls. I mean, should be have a clear mind really when speaking to you. And well, maybe in this one episode it might have been okay, because I was speaking about a blunt, brazen opportunity that it was even unthinkable for myself, and therefore maybe I had to distance myself physiologically even from it through smoking. But maybe it wasn't even that great, because maybe, yeah, I should have talked about this spectacular possibility of a love trio. Should have talked about this extensively and really with my mind working at top speed. But I don't know, it all happened this way, and we don't want to change the transcurs of the podcast. Now, can't be changed. This is also what this one girl from work told me, whom I fell in love with, and she was, yeah, in my project, we were working together, and I told her then when I started the podcast about my episodes in number 10 and 11, I talked about Donald Trump and the US elections and stuff, and yeah, taking some somehow unseen standpoint for here in Germany, of course, pointing out some good sides of the Trump presidency or Trump as a candidate. And therefore I felt insecure about should I really publish this. But then she said to me, oh yeah, I think you just gotta get into it, just it's has to be something normal, and yeah, I think it's good, you recorded it and can just get it out, and maybe later straighten some things up in later episodes or something like this, she told me. And there I thought, well, you're right, I should just publish them out. And since then I always did it and never, well, I don't know, never really kept an episode or that was planned for publication, because yeah, then I felt she's right, gotta can't wait for the perfect podcast to happen. I mean, what can't be recorded 1,000 times and still everything, especially in love, it can't even be perfect, says Slava Žižek. You have to demonstrate also in a love letter that you're trembling and shaking somehow and can't find the right words. That's what he wrote, and it's rang true to me. Yeah, you have to be like this, have to stumble, mumble, and not know what you're really talking about, and only then it's gonna be an authentic, credible love love experience, love demonstration, because it stirs you up. So this is Da sind wir wieder bei Tischlein deck dich, 172 glaube ich, oder auch schon 73, ja, ich glaube so ungefähr. Und das ist ein schwieriges Fahrwasser, habe ich gemerkt. Vor 100 Episoden waren diese Folgen diejenigen, die mich etwas vom Gleis gebracht haben. Und vielleicht ging es da auch um die Liebe, ich weiß gar nicht, was da war. Es gab dieses eine Mädchen, das verliebt war, aber jedenfalls entgleiste da irgendwie mein Podcast-Zug, hatte ich das Gefühl, nach den wahnsinnig guten Folgen der 60er, auch der 50er Episoden, der neue Boost, der neuen Beziehung, die damals auch angefangen hatte. Aber dann ließ ich mich etwas zu sehr gehen und auch etwas zu sehr in den trägen Habitus hineingleiten, zu sagen, ach komm, mach ich noch eine Episode und noch eine heute. Und auf diese Zeit muss ich dann eher kritisch zurückblicken heute, auch wenn ich danach hier ab den 110er Folgen auch diese Hetzjagd auf Stefan und Wolfgang einläutete und auch da öfter mal nach und nach Tag um Tag am Produzieren war. Das ist also nicht per se schlecht, aber ich weiß nicht, vielleicht müsste ich die Folgen auch nochmal nachhören. Ich habe nur so ein leichtes Ressentiment in mir und muss hier sagen, ich muss deshalb jetzt, weil ich auch, weiß auch nicht, ob ich an die Macht der Zahlenmagie glaube, aber warum nicht, dass wir deshalb hier diese böse Magie der Nummern überwinden können. Ja, es ist 173, glaube ich, ne? Und irgendwie so war das auch Nummer 75, las ich ein Deutschland gelegt vor. Deutsch. German, gotta talk English here and excuse me, I'm so tired. Oh, I had to get up early today because my aunt celebrated her birthday. My parents picked me up again in the morning and I was a little sleepy because I didn't sleep so much. Or let's say it out loud, because of masturbation. And yeah, I mentioned this in this one episode, but it's normal. I mean, and it's also then a surprise to for us men to find out that women also do it, or at least in school. Yeah, it's a good thing to talk about these topics and to point out that for women it's also natural or healthy and as any individual feels, but somehow it's all centered on the male desire, everything, talk about sex, with this I gotta explain a little from this family meeting today, that always being there with the family gets me into a mood where I'm reluctant and thinking would be nice to be far from your family, like when we were in Argentina living there and you don't have to go to all these birthday celebrations and Christmas. But and this made me think then of what I said, of course I want to be, and you need to be rebellious in love, and only then could enjoy it. So to love like this out of the normalcy, thinking outside the box in a love triangle. But I'm a little shaken today, maybe, yeah, because of this. Didn't sleep so much, and I mean, with this masturbation, I mean, it's normal also. As men, now I feel under pressure to feel like I'm ashamed, or that a woman always is a prize, right? As we read about this male competition. And now I point this out and I admit it, that somehow I've been thinking erotically about this or that woman. And oof. Yo, sorry. Books fell down here. And this then makes me think, yeah, I failed as a man. I can't accomplish this. To really seduce this woman, to really get into material contact with her. And it's obvious it should be my goal. But why even? This is my point. No, it shouldn't. You can't have sex with anyone. It's practically impossible to have sex with everyone that is somehow attractive to you in an erotic way. Therefore, it's normal also to masturbate. And I mean, there has to be found some sort of a path, a balance, where you say, okay, this, so many people I can have sex, and this has to be tried out and learned. But in this liberalism, of course, in this male competition, you always strive for more and think like the maximum is to get always more, like an infinite accumulation. And Eva Illouz analyzes that in the last century, women through this emancipation process somehow they rose up to at least be equal to men also in this role, also being able to have multiple sexual contact. But this whole model, says Illes, then is maybe not that good and not that suitable for love, this model of accumulation. And I think that too, it's totally absurd the way this is treated in liberalism. It's always about having not enough sex or having too much sex, or yeah. But on the other hand, this comparing, this competition for men, simple talking about sex is also something playful and lustful in itself, and therefore we have to free and open this possibility up to women and show to them that it's not malicious to think like this about sex, but somehow normal or natural to give in to your own desires and to not be only reacting and giving in to the male desires. Okay, now let's begin really here. I mean, we gotta catch up with this poem, round up this poem, of which around 2/4 remain to be read out, and we have the intimate subjects again. One more thought about sex, maybe for men. It's also a source of joy to give pleasure to women. Also the other way around, of course, but what I was always pointing out, hinting at, that the female desire is somehow harder to satisfy, of course, and therefore, of course, this takes up a little more work than as a man. Of course, I always also want to include other genders and want to talk universalistically, but I hope everyone can understand what I said about it one time in a TSY episode, that somehow these other genders are fine and everybody should feel free to identify as them. But we gotta leave that out in speech, in language. We can't include everyone, and therefore talking about men and women is not like an act of aggression against people who don't identify with this, but it's an act of practical, you have to take practical decisions and compromises, and it's not that practical to talk always like this, summing up always mentioning 1,000 genders, or yeah, what you could also be trans, or it doesn't matter. Of course you can be trans, but it doesn't change the universalistic point that I'm making here, that also as a trans person or a lesbian, you can have sex with another woman. And then my point is simply that whoever it is who is trying to satisfy this woman, a straight guy or a homosexual woman or a trans person, but then you have a difficult task, a strenuous task in front of you, and therefore this is also pleasurable when you see then maybe that, yeah, I achieved it, I did it, I can do this, I'm so powerful and mighty. And the other way around, of course, also, but it's a little more simple with men. I mean, and I don't know, maybe it's just my speculations, I don't even know if it's so accurate what I'm saying here, but my philosophical definitions here. And yeah, that I feel somehow this, that as a man you're an instrument of the female satisfaction. Of course you also should then strive for your own satisfaction and look after your own pleasure as a man. But yes, somehow all connected to the scene I mentioned in November when we were there in the office, and I was there, the only man, of course, and then you two girls, and it felt like, yes, somehow you need me just to be there and tell you something, give you an introduction into the German culture, and somehow you need me, but I just want to be there for you like this instrument, and not in a sexual way, just in this way, in a social way, being there for you, and that you can use me somehow, or, yeah, this gives pleasure to all of us, and but somehow your pleasure might be bigger, or you just, maybe, of course, that happy you found someone in Germany who, where you are foreign here, and who can explain something to you, and yeah, also this, also therefore this differences in culture is also always very exciting in love or in other friends or colleague relationships, and it doesn't have to do with race, but of course there's a lot of different cultures. And yeah, race, I think I talked about it yesterday, that is also something erotic, and why not just say it like this, that my ex-girlfriend, she's from another race, or somehow it looks different, and yeah, it doesn't sound bad to me to use that word, like the discussions about racism here in Western Europe and the US, of course, are so riled up that it seems impossible. And but I mean, yeah, I just like to say it because somehow it's erotic to say this and say, yeah, this is another race, and I like to mix, intermingle, and this is the key concept of love, of course, this intermingling. And then there with different races, you see that the children that are produced from such a love affair, and they have, well, then they are also in their outer appearance, and the skin color and everything also intermingled. But okay, with this, let me mention one more point and annotate it here. I mean, why not? But I shouldn't stick so closely to my notes. I thought that yesterday that I was somehow working down my list of notes, but this is not so good as a free discourse. And yeah, I said I need to boost up my energy. We can also play some songs, but I need to talk adequately for you girls. And I don't know what is adequate, but simply that you can, shouldn't be, at least you shouldn't be crude. This is a nice word that will appear in this poem. You shouldn't be uncouth. I don't know if you know this word, Zorina. Know a lot of English. Oafish, teufelhaft, oafish, uncouth, a flegelhaft bursch, or crude, or yeah, something like this. And you, Lilia, yeah, feels a little wary now. Wary, yeah, interesting word. That fear I might have hurt you with these last episodes, and especially. Especially now, it's Sunday, but I didn't publish. I didn't publish the last two ones. That is to say, the TSY 14 episode, which is only about half an hour, but somehow it stands out. And this I didn't publish because, yeah, I wanna go to the office tomorrow, see reactions to the other one, to the last published episode 171, which already was also a little, well, peculiar in a way, and you weren't there in the office on Friday. So yeah, let's see that. And I fear already with this, oof, talking about Zoriana again, I could have hurt you a lot, maybe, Lily, but yeah, I think it's clear that we're both playing this game, and yeah, I'm sorry. We're both so stupid, and I really admitted that I'm stupid and an idiot for everything that I did back then on Christmas and everything. how this developed, that we're not blocking and ignoring each other. So stupid, but please forgive me, Lilia. Just tell me that still you will look at me, like to talk to me. And therefore I also have to provoke you and tell you, if you don't come to see me, then I can go on talking and talking about other girls. And although it might be unfair also to you, Zoriana, because this is unfair, but I think I've been clear here and I pointed this out, that I don't really feel in love, and also don't feel like it has to be this way. It could be, but we shouldn't. I shouldn't express that much in a podcast, I feel, because now then it makes us in the office self-conscious, inhibited, or self-conscious, a word that also means inhibited. I looked it up just before starting this episode. So this makes us this way in the office, where we could enjoy this great pleasure of a conversation again, but then we can't, because now the podcast is standing in our way. But okay, the next point of my list is that love is somehow a bourgeois thing today. It's thought of as, Robert Faller points this out too. Why is this microphone not that loud? The recording is not that loud somehow. But he points it out. When he talk about love, the term love nowadays is associated with the foundation of a, well, household. A household, yeah. A space where you live together, Gründung eines Haushalts. And today's concept of love excludes then other shades and varieties of love that could be an affair. And this is important, that we live in a time somehow so moral or schönseelisch. Like to have beautiful souls and be moral and say, an affair, this is not even thinkable. I mean, in the material reality, it happens all the time, like 40% of people or 30 in a relationship do it. But it's not even part of our ideal reality. We don't think about it and say love is just this founding of a household and everything else. Well, this is then not love. This is the swinish desire or something else. And this I want to tell to you, Zoriana, that I feel this somehow, that I don't want to found a household with you, in this trio maybe. We have to think about it, as I said yesterday, a couple of months. But right now it doesn't feel this way that I feel with Lilia, that I just want to be with her and want to give her anything she demands from me. And also would like to live together someday maybe. But with you, Zoriana, I mean, this doesn't feel like love, like this crazy feeling right now, but it could develop to be something, and I don't know what, but it could be anything in the affair. And this is not to be said that it would be any less or any worse than having this great love, this vast, abundant, extensive love that is somehow this foundation of an inner circle of the bourgeois life. You share everything, share your money also, and this is great, and I also strive for this, but this is not the only facade, the only shade or tone or variety of love. And my point is that in love is so serious nowadays, maybe especially, but somehow love has to do with irony, but the mix, the balance between irony and seriousness nowadays gets completely unbalanced. Also maybe, I don't know, here in my speaking, but no, I think I try to keep the balance. But that is two series. It's all so decisive because it's deciding about your life, about your status. Also as a woman, of course, but more as a man. Sexuality is associated with status, as we read there. But the point being that it's so serious. You don't want to fuck up. You don't want to mess this up. You have to be. I know this is the greatest pleasure, and of course you would do anything and totally change your personality if only that could help you in achieving this one love relationship. You feel this would be, how great would it be to wake up with this person, to have a breakfast, and therefore you would totally bend, twist yourself, distort all of your views and your personality. And yeah, this is somehow insane or unhealthy, and I feel it all has to do with capitalism, because we're not secure about our position in the labor market. It's not our own interests that we guard there, that we look after. Well, we would need a union to do that, association of the workers, but we need to pretend like, yeah, these foreign interests, the interests of the capitalist, are our own interests, and be like this, yeah, we're so happy with this work. But of course it's not easy to be happy in capitalism with work. I can maybe be it because of this reduced timesheet, reduced working hours, just 25 hours a week, and the love is somehow a bourgeois value, like a value on your bank account. And therefore, it's all about the budget also. You don't want the budget to be lowered. And that's why it's so serious. And with you, Lydia, then this creates this blockade then. Because then I think, oh yeah, in 100 years or in 50 years, when I'm really old and looking back into my life, then I could hear these episodes and I would always ask myself, oh, did I mess this up? There was this wonderful girl, Lydia. And what did I do then? Didn't I get out the best of this possibility? And therefore now already it feels like very heavy, because yeah, it gave you so many love spells, and feels like, how can I live up to this? There's then this pressure, but not this pressure from you in your hands that I would crave for and yearn for, long for, or pine for. Nice word, also annotated here. To pine for you is sich verzieren nach dir. It's like longing for you. So, and I think I've expressed also, it's so serious and I don't have the solution, only that it's put a lot of heaviness on my shoulders, when I also feel like I'm with you, Zoriana, that somehow, now thinking of, oh god, but this is, but yeah, why not, let's speak all bluntly here, having an affair with you now, because with Lilia it seems like it takes a little more time, and yeah, maybe this is good, we both need more time, but what I would need, I think, after this experience with my ex-girlfriend, is just to, yeah, enter in some affair with someone, and in a relationship that wouldn't aim at being such a long-lasting or exclusive relationship. And this, I think, is what I wanted after the breakup from my ex-girlfriend, because this was always the underlying problem with her, and I felt, yeah, I also want to share my life with you, with her, my ex-girlfriend, and want to be like this, want to give you love, vows, but it can't be always exclusively like this. I believe in polyamory, and yeah, but how is this going to be solved? Maybe with Lilia it would then feel also the same, or in a similar position, that I feel she's such a great person, and how could we both understand polyamory? It's hard to conceptualized inside this framework of the society. And therefore, I always thought about these waitresses there at the restaurants. And yeah, I just wanted to talk to them, but this then blocks me thinking about, to what could this lead then? And this is so absurd, because I know, well, maybe she finds me also attractive, this waitress or that one. But the point is, maybe yes, and maybe she would also have like to have an affair, but okay, there are all these barriers and somehow we don't get to it, somehow, yeah, feels like, or at least right now, I'm not able to even think of this or to take some steps, ask her on a date. But still, you could just talk and have a nice chat there when she comes to give me the cuenta, the bill. And then, yeah, sometimes we talk. But with this one waitress, I just like her so much because she did so many times the first steps, and I honor that so a lot, because yeah, she always asked me, yeah, how you doing, and said then, yeah, have a nice work day, because she knew that I was working, because I paid there with the not with real money but with these coupons. Coupons, yeah. And well, just gotta express this. It's kind of the same situation as with you, Zorian, in the office, that I think, oh yeah, this person is so attractive, but I don't even know what to do. I mean, I would like to have an affair now, but on the other hand, I don't really want to think about it, because that's a huge problem, this past relationship, and I don't even know if I'm already over it. I still think back to my ex-girlfriend and somehow still want her back. And yeah, therefore nothing happens, not even such a small talk conversation, which would be so nice. And this waitress, I thought then, maybe she's not even looking for a guy to take her around the world or to show the world, to pass all these nice vacations together in love, like, could be so pleasing. But no, maybe what she really needs is just someone she can have a chat with in my lunch break at noon, or someone she can talk to and talk about some everyday problems. So this is the problem with thinking about love as a so high concept, thinking, yeah, it's this bourgeois, it's the highest value, and this is my thing. I just want to learn. I never had so many experiences. I didn't quantify it here, but I think I've told you about everything, and that most of my love experiences were that imaginary, like with this girl Melissa or Sophie. Talked about her. She was kind of the first one that really stuck to me, this feeling. Like, yeah, in the past, maybe also asking yourself, why did this go this way? Why didn't I make more of it? And so, didn't really have a lot, and this was the main or the only real experience then with my Peruvian girlfriend. And therefore, I want to learn, and just gotta express this. And with this, maybe we can play a song here, Learn Yourself. I played it in episode number 83, I think, in German. These episodes that I was not so content, I was not so happy with those episodes. All those episodes in the 70s and 80s and also 90s of my German podcast, and then only with episode 100 it got better. And this I recorded 1 year ago, and I think it was 1st of July, when I also had a short breakup, pause with my ex-girlfriend, and then we got back together in August. But I recorded this and I felt this freed all the pressure. Number 100, talking about sex, also about health and everything. And so let's play this song, yeah, Learn Yourself by the beautiful Girls, it's a great band from Australia, which lamentably already dissolved years ago, but they used to play, make music around 10 years ago, and they were a band from Australia with only boys, I think three boys, but calling themselves the Beautiful Girls, because of course these are the muses, these beautiful girls are at the base of everything, and somehow they coerce you and force you to produce art. With this, enjoy this song.
Everybody thinks we'll fall apart, and everybody's quick to point their fingers at what they think is causing the problem. What they don't see is what they won't see, my friend. And we've all got to learn ourselves before we can judge someone else. And we've all got to learn ourselves before we can judge someone else. Just like the Holy Scripture talks of a road to redemption in amongst the thorns, the path is beset by ego and greed, and if we don't see it, then we won't ever be free. And we've all got to learn ourselves before we can judge someone else. And we've all got to learn ourselves before we can judge someone else.
Yes, we do.
And we've all got to learn ourselves before we can judge someone else. And we've all got to learn ourselves before we can judge someone else. Along the path we walk, we've only got to find. Along the path we walk, we've only got to find. Along the path we walk, we've only got to find our own heart.
Always wondered about this final accord, these tones with which the song ends. It somehow seems to allure, lead to a dissonance, and somehow seems scary. Also, you have to find your own heart and own mind in this word mind that he sings there, and Jesus. Very long. And okay, this song I discovered now, it has a remastered version that I put into the podcast, because I think back then in my German episodes I put the other version in it. And so with each iteration you learn and you master yourself, and or be mastered. And this leads us now, I think, to the poem. Let's look at this. I have the English translation of this poem, which is about die beiden ukrainischen Blümchen, die ich bei der Arbeit traf. Yeah, the girls really gotta say this in a way, yeah. I'm proud of myself to have gotten this far and to be committed to my work here in the podcast. And yeah, tell this to myself, totally speaking in earnest, that somehow I'm glad to be working for you. And this is enough somehow, yeah. You need someone to gift your art to give it as a present, because the genius, as Robert Faller writes, this what is maybe inside an artist and makes him feel so pressed to create something. But this is nothing personal, but also something societal, also that comes from outside and that is infused into us by other people. And therefore it has to give back then the product, the fruits of this work has to be given back. And yeah, somehow I feel it's good this way. Hope you don't feel overwhelmed, but yeah, it's as I said, I mean, we maybe could think about having sex sometime, but as I said in the last published episode 171, that it wouldn't be adequate for you girls to just have this crude, raw sex, and it has to be sublime somehow. Have to come up with something more that would match your brilliance, of the brilliance of you too. And only then, maybe, if I feel, yeah, I have done and produced something, maybe then I can feel worthy and feel like, yeah, now we can, that could also happen, a contact in this more vulgar material way. But for me as an artist, of course, I'm in this position where my art is already enough for me. It's also a gift to myself, and somehow it's enough for me even to know or to clap on my own shoulders and tell myself it's an adequate job that I made. And yet, therefore, you girls, you have to really take the initiative, but don't let us think so rapidly about these strenuous topics. Therefore, just think about coming to me, talking again, maybe next week, as I said, you want to, but I don't want to. I have to really let this cool down and be happy whenever you feel like you could come over. Would really make my day. And with this, we gotta dive into the poem again. So we were reading here about you as a mathematician should know what an isomorphism is. And yeah, Lilia, this exists between you and me, and I want to support you financially so you can dedicate yourself, devote yourself to your art or study again, anything, just that you flutter up like a young bird. And yeah, but then it continues here. But Zoriana is different from us. You, Zoriana, are a worker through and through. You would never let go of your position, your place in the workplace, across from me, in the office, from where you embrace the world, the whole world, and with your compelling thoughts, you bring to the knees every programming problem. But unfortunately, you also bring me to my knees. Of course, it would be easier if you weren't so beautiful. so young and naturally feminine. Of course, all of you women can be however you want. I only told Lilia that she played femininity a little too much. But excuse me, forgive me, my lily, my violet rose. You can do and be anything you like. But I just wanted to give you my impression. You like to pretend to be quite feminine. But you don't need that. You could strip off the femininity. Soriana is femininity without trying. Not that one is better than the other. Oh dear. No, I have to be precise. Your body, Soriana, is very memorable. It jumps out at you, especially as a straight man. Yeah, but not only to straight men. I have this feeling that also you, Lilia, noticed this about her, and somehow, but it's not only her beauty, it's also that she's so young in a way. It's baffling somehow. Yeah, let's continue. Baffling being. And also you, I think, Lilia, you noticed this. Okay. Especially as a straight man. Your skin shimmers matte white. Your hair is black. Your features are fine, yet straight and purposeful. What scares me? You must be afraid too. You're young and in a strange place. But I'm more afraid. What does that glimmer of your indelible beauty mean? Your introvision. I have to invent new words to describe you. So no matter what it means, I'd just like to talk to you two again. So infinitely detached and free, unified, united in the social bubble, in the capsule that takes us out of the office and into a magical place where we chat, joke, and laugh. Without colleagues. I want you all to myself. This is such a nice part that, yeah, I really had this feeling. I want you for myself. Don't want any other colleague. It's just that, please look at me and please never. Of course, I do believe in polyamory and also, but simply in this very situation you feel like, no, I don't want anyone to interfere right now, and just, no, please, just you two girls stay with me. And but moving on. No worries, no work. Oh, Soriana, oh, Lilia, could one live like this forever? Like that one time we were talking about vacation? This was the most beautiful conversation with you. And I love you both so much for it. To have given me these few minutes, I felt like the rooster in the basket. Like the only man, a pearl you like to put on, so that she may adorn you. That it may adorn you. And I would do anything for you. You can do anything to me. What you like. Take me to your home, to the vast Ukraine, which is so beautiful, must be, when she gives birth to such beautiful daughters. The Ukrainian nation is great and immortal. May the war end how it will. The fire in you will never go out. That reminds you of the homeland, your families and childhood memories. I love you for the love you give to your country, and which I saw in your eyes back then during the war discussion. I don't know anything about the world. Of course, I can share with you the little that I suspect or figure out if you desire it. But don't expect me to explain everything, only that you are beautiful and smart and eloquent, articulate and full of wit, wits, esprit, geist, full of delight and spirit and, but dear girls, you know that yourselves. Look at as many men as you want. The world is yours. You're ripe to conquer and own what you fancy. Whatever you fancy. Fancy is like desire. Didn't know that. Here in Germany or somewhere else, in love or at work, in living or in civil life, you will succeed everywhere. But if only you could find another use for me and a little time to get back into the capsule. Capsule in German. Then I would love to do that and promise you everything that's possible, humanly possible, or even more. Because for you there are no limits, nothing unimaginable. You are my borders, surround me and give me riddles. And I just want you to play with me, tease me or annoy me or rage against me. In any case, master me through anger, weariness, or being annoyed, or even love. I accept everything. Just please see me, open your eyes. Yes, basically I would like to continue to love like this forever. Very ideally, only with podcasts and poems. Talking to you is too hot for me. Too tricky. Where else does this lead? I'm so scared of sex and of having to stand my man. Yet sex isn't the worst of it. But in the social area, where the others, parents and other citizens see me and see that I've succeeded, I've got a girlfriend on my arm. That is so unfair. I don't even know what I mean by that exactly. Well, and here, maybe I can stop, because this refers, of course, to the others, to my family, to what I said. And somehow today I read about the riots in France. Of course, there were big riots now in France. But my point of view, France is always a little more revolutionary. And therefore, maybe, yeah, and if I was living in France, maybe then I could popularize my podcast also, I thought. Because there you can feel, maybe there could be a spark of the revolution breaking out any moment. And it would really make sense to be educating the masses. But here in Germany, it also must happen, but we're far away from it. Maybe even decades away from it. And therefore, I like to plan in this large time frame and say, yeah, maybe in 10 years my podcast can develop and become more famous. But in Germany we have time. I mean, this, yeah, revolution, it's a long path there. But France, what I read about this, that these banlieues, they're people, they want to be, there's this question about why some people also from other ethnicities or migrants or their parents or grandparents migrated into France. But why then does this segregation come up? Segregation and poverty, misery. But why is there are communities living so recluded? And it's not that easy and simple as to say the French state is that racist. Of course, it's always racist and capitalism. But on the other hand, France is also a very large social state. There's more equality economically than in Germany. People get paid better. And there's a better social system than in Germany. So the society is more equal in a way. The distribution of wealth is not that unfair and unequal as in Germany. Although, of course, it's also capitalist. But there are also all these programs of integration, is what I read in these, in this one author from Makroskop, nice website in German for economics and politics topics. And he said, yeah, there are billions being invested in these banlieues, in these suburbans, but this integration is not so easy, and it's not right to just say, like, now from a left liberal standpoint, yeah, it's all racism to blame, and racism is to blame, and these people are right in looting and committing acts of violence. So so this is not right, was what this author articulated, and it's crude that some media are then sympathizing with this. But of course, yeah, always the revolutionary spark, it's good, but it has to be it has to be part of a social movement, and the protesters should then put up some demands for other politics, like the Yellow Vests, this movement in France also did. But then simply looting and applying violence, this doesn't lead to a progressive outcome. But the point I just wanted to make here, it's a long way, drifting off, is that what he explained there, this author, was that somehow you want to create a counterculture. Like, of course, there are also many religious fundamentalists, like Muslim fundamentalists, and yeah, I digress, but this is important. And they simply don't want this French state, which is secular, like saying that religion is everyone's personal thing and the state shouldn't interfere. And this tradition is in France even stronger than in Germany, where of course we also have a secular state, but in France, for all of history and the French Revolution, this separation has been a lot stronger. And yeah, but these young people then, migrants or children of former migrants who are not integrated and form their counterculture. This is the point, counterculture that he brought up. You just want to be different, other, want to put up that other counter image of these other people that you feel are unfairly prohibiting you from entering into the society or from participating. And therefore, like Boko Haram, he said, is simply means, this is of course a terrorist group in Nigeria, somewhere in Africa, but Boko Haram simply means that books are sin, literature or education is a sin, and therefore this is their world view that it's so childish in a way, as I notice in myself also, that I also want to rebel against my parents, that if the French society tells you that yeah, literature is good and you need to get educated, then you say, no, this is exactly, I'm identifying with the opposite, I don't want education. Everything that is French or is literature, education is bad. And this is somehow the point that I wanted to make here, that always you want to counter, you want to counter the expectancies of your opponent, of the other one. Like Robert Faller also points out, crucial example that the original inhabitants of America that were called Indians by Columbus, okay, these Indians they were called, but are they really called in English? Because this is now a topic of cultural appropriation and everything, but American Indian, this doesn't make sense, right? Because it's not really India, just Columbus thought. But when he arrived there, when the colonizers arrived, and they took these other people of other races also from this other continent as kind of the same as the Nazis, as Untermenschen saw the people in the East as Untermenschen, and also the colonizers, of course, thought of these people like humans of a lesser value. And there, these Indians then notice the way the other ones are looking at them, and therefore want to fulfill their expectation in the first place and really be that primitive, that crude. But they also want to top it, want to be even more crude, and therefore they ate their own excrements, their own shit, because they wanted to demonstrate feces or excrements, to simply demonstrate to the colonizers that they are really that primitive, or even more raw or crude than they had thought and assumed. And this is the thing, this is a kind of childish rebellion then against this expectation of the other. But why did I even get here? I mean, yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense putting this into context with what I write here, that I don't even understand it, at least when I wrote it, but now it gets a little clear maybe through what I say, that when the other ones look at you and see that you have succeeded in life because you have a girlfriend on your arm, and there you have the highest good you can achieve in life, and also in capitalism somehow this guards you, you have achieved this holy union and also a safe place, an island where you're safe from these capitalist brutal fights to death, or the labor market who can survive, and therefore you have really achieved this protection and this love shield. It's a shield that shields you from the other world. And these other people could see this, and this is what I don't like, although I don't know even why, but somehow you want to be maybe also I identify now with this insult position, with this position of not having a girlfriend, because somehow it was always part of, for a long time, part of my situation, and therefore maybe I don't know, but that you want to show to people you're even worse than they thought. And it has to do with that I simply don't want to take part in this game of sex, like what I said about eating disorders. Also, you don't want to enter into this world of the adults where they're traded this real goods and this highest good, the sex, and you don't want to that they have this power over you, that society and its discourse define you also, and to feel like they are inside your head, the power, the symbol of society is inside your head. And there's everywhere talk about sex in the media, and everyone knows that also I have this desire, and therefore, but I don't want to, I somehow want to escape from this. And with this, I think maybe can get a little clearer what I wrote here, put some light on it, cast some light on it. But now we're entering really in the biological realms with what we got to read here. We'll enter the biological fields and the crude nature of our biology or physiology. So let's go on in this poem. Sorry, now I should really read until the end. Please see me, open your eyes. Oh yeah, I've succeeded, I've got a girlfriend on my arm. That is so unfair. I don't even know what I mean by that exactly. Well, anyway, this is harmless. I write and evoke your images. From you, tall, blooming, straight plant Lilia. Or I can call you Fiona, which means the fair woman in sonorous Ukrainian. And your picture, Zoryana, blurry, because I don't want that you shine too bright and that you outshine Fiona, who is my everything, my star, who shines for me, guides me. And while I'm writing, the juice is leaking from the tip of my penis. It's the cosmic heat that floods me, enters me when I think of you so lovingly. And wish I wouldn't be like that, such a sublime man who just isn't crude enough to grab and to finally really seduce you. Now I seduce you only imaginatively, dreamlike, in slices while writing. It's so nice to think my penis is yours, and he's much smoother in the last days. So it seems to me, very youthful, childlike he seems to me, appears to me. Completely changed, enchanted, streamlined of you and your glow. You never fade away. Both of you are points radiating in the office. Radiating so bad it scares me. Because the other colleagues, the men, could see you too and desire you. And then what? Am I left there without you? Then someone else leads you by the hand and away from me? Will you even change your workspace into another room to a colleague you prefer? Admittedly, I'm cranky. These lines will not refute that, if not prove it. You, Lilia, of course know what is meant as a logician. Coolly perceptive mathematician whose sharp mind I admire and envy. You, Zoryana, you are a practitioner instead, studying software engineering. You are so wonderful, so hands-on. You know what you're doing and what you want. Please understand me, you two are two unlimited points, self-contained, resting within you, complete within yourselves. You are so precious, impossible to quantify. Impossible to quantify. Or to certify, or put into words on paper. All in vain. And yet you are there, without a doubt. I'm going back to the office tomorrow. And there this fact stands before me. Yeah, I wrote this, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago, also on a Sunday. Reared up, unsustainable, untamable. Unsustainable here means unstoppable. Anyway, it's all too much. When I think of you 2 points, two people, those glowing individuals for whom an unused future is destined. then everything collapses in me or explodes. Anyway, I want to sink like a bridge, which is to be brought down by explosive charges, which, as it seems, didn't work with the Crimean bridge. But yes, a man faced with such a woman as each of you two is a breathtaking, incomparable one. Certainly one that puts me in a double mill, gets me moving, makes me run in all sorts of different directions. I erupt, kick up the dust, run on gravel roads and over grass blades. No matter where, just quickly. Just be masculine and prove yourself, whatever. I'm here, I'm a man, yes. That doesn't mean I see you girls as sex objects. But sex is beautiful, no doubt about it. And if you wanted to kidnap me there into your love grotto, Grotte in German, then I would try not to put any obstacles in the way. But of course I can't promise anything, because I'm so shy and self-conscious. So let's keep talking, entertaining. It worked so perfectly every time. I was a little more nervous with you, Soriana. But that's easy to explain. Practice creates masters. And between you and me, you dear Fiona or Lilia, there were already so many and such successful exercises. Perfection has been achieved. And seldom do I remember such wonderful conversations like those with you were. Rarely have I experienced such joy in life. But maybe you were suspicious whether men are not like that by nature, that they always desire the more beautiful woman's body, or just the next one. But no, although yes, it could be, not by nature, but through our social role. Well, but yes, it's true, Soriana is very alluring and challenging, simply by sitting still, presenting to all the world her splendor, her still ascending line, her perfect blossoming, her eternal spring. This is the end. I like this expression, the still ascending line. Ihre noch aufsteigende Linie. This refers to the fact that you're so young, Soriana, that you're still developing this young age, and somehow all the world can see this, and it's already too much now, but already too much beauty and splendor now that is in you, but still you're growing or developing more, and this male, the swinishness of men, it comes out here in these last paragraph, that it is not due to nature, not encrypted in our biology, but in social roles. And we got to educate women so they get more swinish. And yeah, maybe therefore it's good what I do here, that I say, yeah, I can't even, or it's not that easy for me to think or practice sex. Think about or practice. And yeah, but it should be good, because we the role for us men nowadays only can be to educate women and to tell them that we expect from them that they show us their desire and that they lure us into their grotto. Love grotto is like a cave also. Yeah, and I think I've given it all. I mean, this poem is crazy, and the part of my biology is maybe the best. I don't know, that just that. Yeah, this is somehow, you know, you want to succeed in love. Of course, it's all these bourgeois problems. It's so all so in earnest. And but thinking about what we read in Eva Illouz's book about the masculine competition and somehow compete, it has to do with autonomy, authority, and well, autonomy, authority. It's something else, right? But these were main domains, male domains in the past, and now somehow this challenged the male position in the household. But where can we live this manliness then? Only in sexuality, and this is the problem. It grows too big. All the function that our sexuality has to satisfy is too abundant, and this is then this hypertrophy. Sexuality means too much for us men. It means all sorts of different things. What I thought then was, well. There we have it. Sorry, I just was looking for my note. Yeah, here we have it. The competition is bitter. Yeah, this is a gloomy feeling. Also with you, Winter, Lilia, that I had already when we were talking. I said, yeah, already this is a prize already there. This is a triumph over other men. Maybe this other colleague that's sitting opposite there. This is a triumph. And no matter what I think subjectively, it's my objective position as a man that it is this way. Women compete this way. It doesn't depend from our will. It's our social role. And I can push this away, this feeling, but it's objectively still there. It doesn't matter. And yeah, and therefore, it's a triumph also against this other colleague. It's a win. Therefore, yeah, also already talking is already sex, because already there you demonstrate that you're at least able and able to talk to a woman, and so many men aren't even able nowadays. Don't mean this colleague by this, but also myself, of course, I always said not really able, and only then taking this step with Melissa, asking her for her name 2 years ago, and yet this was maybe the first real step, a real try, real time when I really tried to talk to a woman. For after a long time, I don't remember, or of course I worked or talked to a woman in university, but they're just team members or someone you work with. Also in computer science, there are some women studying it, but not that many. As in mathematics, I think there are way more. But yeah, this is the point. It's objective, the position. It doesn't matter what I think subjectively, but still I somehow notice this, somehow perceive this, and it's always going to be this way, also hurting. And therefore, Lilia, just need to tell you this. It has to do all with all this, and it wasn't so good, it wasn't adequate what I wrote you on Christmas, but it had to do with this pressure that I didn't want this to be this way, that I always have to come to you. And yeah, I was also angry at you. Why don't you understand this? I mean, we two both like each other, but why do you want this to be this way, that you wait for me? Why, Lilia? Just tell me. Just, yeah, the only explanation that I have is, and this would flatter me, of course, that you were also falling in love with me, and somehow this difference in position is romantic, somehow it's erotic that a man has to step up. And yeah, this would make me understand, Lilia, but if not, nothing. If we were only being friends and being colleagues or slowly becoming friends there, then I totally couldn't understand, why are you acting this way? Why are you behaving like this, always sitting there and waiting for me? Like 1,000 times I came to see you and always was waiting for a couple of days that you finally come to see me. But okay, I just need to be clear, need to get this point, a about Eva Illus and about you, Lilia. Yeah, also the aggression and misunderstandings are always part of love, and you have to let it out. This is what I thought back then also, that yeah, I somehow feel this aggression against you, I feel this lack of understanding to why are you doing this, and maybe we can get to that. But with your message then, analyzing this message, with your message then, you're telling me, yeah, not even if a person doesn't come, doesn't take the first step, it means simply that you're not interested in starting a conversation. Yeah, with this message I felt, yeah, great, this is your way out, and this is the reason for all this, that maybe you girls feel you need to have an easy way out to not be seen as an easy girl. So you can always say, oh yeah, well, maybe I was also a little enchanted, maybe, or talking to you, but no, it never came to you, and therefore we can interpret it this way also and say, yeah, but no, really, I just gotta analyze this message, but sometime else, because yeah, I was thinking about this. This was the crucial point that right after I told you about my podcast and that I texted to you, then yeah, I understand your point, but I think I didn't, and I told you with this sentence I wanted to tell you, yeah, I won't come to see you anymore, you have to come to see me. And yeah, but I think this wasn't your point, this was maybe what you said literally, but yeah, wasn't what you thought, but yeah, this difficult, these paradoxes in communication. But what I was mentioning about Illus here, my note, is that, yeah, this is a triumph when I'm standing there talking to you. This is this competition, yeah, it is bitter, it's hurtful, but in a way it's also not, it's also great for men. Because in the end, it's always best to have an authoritarian structure. Not be yourself, this individual authority, but that's the point about communism, the Communist Party, all the Bolshevik organizations like Komsomol, things that could organize our lives and make it easier, give us a roadmap. It's good to have this authority and this help in life, and this help is also this male position of having to be swinish or having to strive for accumulation of sex partners, sex experiences, or yeah, simply having to be confronted with this competing. What I felt, it doesn't matter, but somehow objectively I'm now competing also against this other male colleague, and this is not so good. But on the other hand, it's always good to have a structure, it's always good to have something that tells you what to do, and somehow this tells me what to do. That's good to desire a woman, it's good to try to seduce her or even to talk to her only as a colleague. It's good to do this, and this is my point, a structure is always good, it allows you to follow, to know what to do, to follow your desire, your instincts. But you can't follow your instincts just intuitively or naturally, well, maybe sometimes some persons, but not me also. Yeah, I think this is just what gives you the sureness and security that you can do this, you can talk to a girl, because you know that this is somehow in society like this, men are these individuals who have to step up and try to do this, and it's all kind of a game, also pleasant, also talking about it, bragging, and some kind of a competition. But although hurtful, at the end of the day it still tells you what to do, and therefore somehow I'm also grateful for this manly masculine position, and this is what gotta be expressed here, that yeah, it can't stay this way, it has to be different also that women become more masculine, but because masculinity is something good in this sense. We have to show the road to women, have to open this road to them, to tell them this. Femininity also is great, of course, Lilia, and you can be whatever you like, be like a child, or like a, like very feminine. But in some aspects, I just mean, gotta be also masculine, like in this aspect, trying to talk to boys and also to other boys, not to me. Of course, polyamory, I'd be happy, or at least, I'd be happy if you talk to other boys and so feel like you want to love them. And this is the point there. You have to become more masculine, women. Because love is something beautiful and you shouldn't be afraid of it. And it's maybe a problem to then be confronted and think, how am I going to do this, take this first step, or how is this shown my desire, or what do I even desire? But it's never a mistake, it's a problem, but a good one. It's a problem that puts a lot of pressure on you, but a good kind of pressure, although not that central pressure, but still it's a step into this direction. What I also annotated here, I don't want to be a man because nowadays in Ukraine, in this war, you see to what it leads, being a man leads to you being forced to enter the military. If you don't have the money to buy your way out, then you're forced to it and then you're gonna die there, or at least, there's big risk. Like there's now 250 Ukrainian soldiers dying a day, each day. This is the average from since the war started. So 250, mostly young men, but there are also older men, I suppose, because they're also already running out, maybe more than 100,000 dead. And this is what it leads to. When you have a penis, then you have also to endure this. And this is the point I want to make somehow. We tend to think like it's all over, at least here in Germany, in this gender question, is that it doesn't matter which gender and what, we're so liberated. And in a way, I think also it's better. These feminist and gender struggles have a progressive aim, although it's in the wrong direction in this liberal framework, but still it's better, I think, than in Ukraine, where you don't have that kind of liberal feminist superstructure, or at least it's not that loud and influential. We think it's all difference between genders are all over and doesn't matter men or women, but there you see when the war breaks out, it matters. And if you're a man, you have this penis, and somehow this means you gotta go into the military. And this is what I want to express. Somehow this all has to do with these bloody fights where you get really killed or injured. So like now there's lots of mines also, and people getting injured very badly in this offensive. And like in World War I, basically, with all their arms or legs off. And this has to do with the male position, with that we're sticking to this traditional roles, and that somehow the man has to come there and act up. And you have to act up, and if you act up, then you're also gonna act up in the war. And somehow this is connected in Lily. I know this is somehow a crazy connection, and I can't blame you in any way for your behavior, or at least not in this way that I tell you it's like sending me to the war. But in a way, it felt like this. You're also sending me to the war because you're telling me you have to be a man, Simon. You really have to be this. And it also doesn't make sense, is what I thought, because women are also physically strong, and maybe there are also other capabilities more decisive in the military than just being strong with the muscles. Of course, women might be a little less physically powerful, but I don't know, maybe they have other talents. And it's kind of absurd, also archaic, but interesting how everyone is seeing this as normal, how no one is questioning this. Why? I mean, of course we should in the first place question the war and say it should end, but then if we have to fight, then why shouldn't women also fight? I mean, yeah, this was my proposal. Yeah, in a revolutionary war, of course there also should be revolutionary Marxist women who enter then our movement and participate in the struggle. It's also maybe gonna be something like a civil war, something like, yeah, in France they're already closer to it. But of course we can use also women in this revolutionary army, but it's not good to fight for a bourgeois army, for an army of one of these democratic liberal states that are states of the bourgeoisie, of the capitalist class. And yeah, of course, to all men or women, I can only say that no, it's good to run away if you feel you have the fortitude. It's good, and it's not normal to fight for your country, or although it might look this way or might be presented this way in the media propaganda, but it's not. And you have to take your own decisions. Like I wrote about Zoriana, she knows what she wants. You have to know what she wants. I mean, okay, you can also just wander through your life, but it's also okay. Like I many times don't want to decide, but at least when a war breaks out and could be dragged into this, then yeah, you have to know on which side you stand, and therefore also educate. As a revolutionary, we have to educate the masses and make distinctions about what kinds of wars there are. And but I think as a closer, I maybe should read this German poem, this poem in German. And I don't even know, Lilia, this felt no so bad, being a little aggressive against you, but yeah, maybe I have to be, and I know that you understand. I know that what I wrote about Ukraine also, that you too, but especially you, Lilia, showed me this love for your country. And Zoriana, yeah, I gotta say, you are more like, yeah, you were like a military commander in your speech, you were more aggressive, masculine also, but I didn't like this so much. But of course I like you a lot, but it felt more like you're simply influenced by the Ukrainian mainstream media, and this is normal. I was also like this when I was young. I don't blame you in any way, just want to tell you this, that I didn't see so much love for your country, but it's more, yeah, I don't know, it's more like you're a general or a news anchor, propagandist, and it's normal. I get it, totally understand it, that you also feel like you have to represent your country now that you're in Germany. You have to show the Germans that you Ukrainians are going on and willing to fight. And maybe you also feel this maybe shame or guilt to have left your country in this hard time, and therefore you have to be even more committed about it, to represent it really in the best way and helping it. And I understand it, and yeah, totally simply want to inform you or educate you about my Marxist standpoint. But when you're so young, it's extraordinary to even be like this interested in politics. I don't know, my roommates here, they sometimes discuss it. I hear some words in Ukrainian about Zelensky or something, but I don't know, I think they're also, like most people, are not that into politics. But with you, Lilia, I saw this and felt this also about Ukraine. But there are a certain number, 169, through your eyes that was flowing out. I don't know what, but blue and yellow eyes. And that you were like a cat, a wild cat. I don't know what made it so special, Lilia, just this one time talking about the war. And then I saw how you love your country and that I love you for this also. That you're so childlike in a way, like this. So innocent. This was a thought that you're like a child identifying with this, the region, the culture you grow into, and this is what I read out in this other, in this Telegram message I read in this episode 169. But I don't know if I really have it in me, but yeah, I think I should read. Or maybe not, because this poem is really long. I mean, but I already read the first third. Yeah, the first third, but maybe I think we can get to it next time. Because now that I talked about France, we can read a French writer, Michel Houellebecq, my famous favorite writers. Let's do this, come on. So here I found the book of the complete poems by Michel Houellebecq, and I'll read this in German, so this will make it a full German podcast. I could also try to read in French, because I learned some of it in school in Germany, not in Argentina, because there it was only these three languages, German, Spanish and English, but before that in Germany, and I liked the language a lot. But let's read this. This is a great poem I already read once in German in number 101, I think. This book is called Gesammelte Gedichte, erschienen im Dumont Verlag, page 573. No, not this one. Page 585. The title of this poem is 1723. Interesting. 17 bis 23 could be an allusion to the age, that in this age of late adolescence, in which also you two girls are now, there you feel everything more intense, and somehow this poem talks to us about this, about a situation back in the train and back in school somehow. Diese Art, mit der Patrika Lali die Mädchen überreden konnte, in unser Abteil zu kommen. Wir waren 17, 18. Wenn ich an sie denke, sehe ich ihre glänzenden Augen vor mir. Und jetzt, wenn ich an eine andere Person das Wort richten will, an eine andere menschliche Person, ist es regelrecht Schwerarbeit, Hemmung, im stärksten Sinn dieser Worte, in dem Sinn, wie sie in den alten Schriften gebraucht werden. Einsamkeit des Lichts in der Mulde des Gebirges, während die Kälte die Lider erobert und schließt. Wird es so sein bis zum Tag unseres Todes? Der gealterte Körper begehrt nicht weniger inmitten der Nacht. Körper ganz allein in der Nacht, hungernd nach Zärtlichkeit. Der fast erdrückte Körper spürt, dass in ihm eine herzzerreißende Jugend wiedergeboren wird. Trotz der physischen Erschöpfung, trotz des Marsches gestern, trotz der gastronomischen Mahlzeit, trotz literweise Bier. Der gespannte, nach Liebkosungen und Lächeln hungernde Körper bebt weiter im Licht des Morgens, im ewigen, wundersamen Licht des Morgens, auf den Bergen. Die Luft etwas rege, der Thymianduft. Diese Berge laden zum Glück ein. Der Blick verweilt, geht weiter in die Ferne. Ich bemühe mich, die Angst zu verjagen. Ich weiß, dass alles Schlechte von mir kommt, aber das Ich kommt von innen. Unter der klaren Luft ist die Freude, aber unter der Haut ist die Angst. Inmitten dieser Landschaft aus mittelhohen Bergen fasse ich langsam wieder Mut. Ich erlange die Öffnung des Herzens. Meine Hände sind nicht mehr gefesselt. Ich fühle mich bereit für das Glück. Ready for happiness. Bliss or happiness. Yeah, Lilia, now I feel this was not so great, this episode. Ah, why did this make me feel so aggressive now against you? But it's tender aggression, and I gotta pick up the microphone soon, tomorrow again, or the day after tomorrow. But I gotta clarify or rectify this, because... yeah. Let's play a song. Maybe this can... explained all then. Your Majesty, and this song is for you, Lilia, and that I want to be the man who walks through the glorious arch of your head. This is what it says in this song, I think, or the only one, but of course I don't want to be the only one to pass through this arch, but I just want to pass into you, like in your memory, in your thoughts. And let's listen to that as an outro. Goodbye and good luck.
am I? Am I good or bad? Could only awake your anger. I could only make you mad. Now was that how you showed me that you were still so young and bald? Anyway, those fights didn't try me, and I was dying of first also growing up. Oh, you are majesty. Your robes were heavy and your robes were very cold. Oh, 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 majesty, yeah. Oh. But in my mind, I could still climb inside your bed. And I could be victorious, still the only man to pass through the glorious arch of your head. Oh, 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 you were majesty. Your arms were heavy and your cheeks were very red. Oh, you are majesty. Now it's like I said, that spirit.